It's everywhere, really. The history of cancer is the history of medicine. It's a part of life. It's certainly a narrative of death in our time and for generations of humans living on Earth. If you don't have to live into your 50s to be able to probably count dozens of people, close friends and relatives, who are touched by cancer. Cancer has touched humanity. Cancer has touched humanity's sense of itself and confronted the definition of medical science as doctors struggle to know what cancer actually is and how to deal with it. Joining us now is oncologist and author Dr. Siddhartha Mukherjee. He's been researching and fighting cancer for over a decade. His new book is called The Emperor of All Maladies, and it's something of a biography of cancer and certainly a biography of humans' attempts to control cancer. He joins us from Boston. First of all, good morning, doctor.
Thank you for having me.
I just have to say, right off the top, this is a very ambitious book. It's both history of science, but also a very personal narrative of your own struggles, and I gather the struggles of all oncologists in trying to deal with what often seems like a lost cause. Why did you decide to embrace this so broadly?
Well, it felt as if I wrote this book because this history really didn't exist. The book was inspired by a patient who asked me, who was battling cancer, and said, "You know, I'm willing to go on fighting, but I need to know what it is that I'm fighting." And the book is a kind of a long answer to that question, to try to describe where cancer begins, where we are in the war on cancer, and what happens next.
Do you think war on cancer is an apt term? It's certainly thrown around very casually, but I'm wondering if, in all of your experience, you feel this really is a war in any kind of traditional sense.
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, the word war is so loaded. It's a word so loaded by history and by meaning. I mean, for patients, when you say you're in a war on cancer, it feels as if you're fighting your own body. But it's a term that we're stuck with because this is a term that comes to us from the 1970s. Actually, it's a coinage from Richard Nixon's times. So I try to avoid the metaphor of war and the word war as much as possible, but it is very much a cultural phenomenon, so we're stuck with it.
And, you know, it's certainly not the only metaphor. If you go back to the time of Galen, the one of the original sort of medical doctors, historians, sort of analysts, anatomists, he described cancer as being the result of some black bile that sort of bubbled into the body. First of all, where did that come from, and how was it eventually debunked by someone in the 1500s?
Well, you know, Galen had this fantastical theory, and the book goes into this. Galen had a fantastical theory that the human body contained four fluids, black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and blood. And he imagined that every disease, literally every disease, was an imbalance of one of these fluids. If you had too much blood, you'd get one disease. If you'd get too much yellow bile, for instance, you'd get jaundice. You know, hepatitis was the quintessential disease. And black bile, he couldn't see it, but he'd hypothesized that there was black bile in the body, and if there was too much black bile, you would get cancer. And it was in the 15th century when anatomists began to open up the human body and they began to look for Galen's mystical fluid, this black bile. They couldn't find it anywhere. So it was actually really seeing and looking that disbanded this theory.
And you tell the story of Vesalius, who was one of these map makers of the human body, who searched in vain for black bile, but he did find that the blood supplies of tumors were one of the keys to figuring out how to kill them.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's an incredible way in which Vesalius's work, taken years, decades later, becomes, you know, converts itself into drugs. For instance, the drug Avastin, we know, is a drug that specifically sort of attacks the capacity of various organs to pull out blood, and in that way also attacks the tumor's ability to pull out its own nourishment, mm-hmm. and therefore, so in some ways, I mean, the part of the story in this book is how incredibly densely history repeats itself in the history of cancer.
Well, you know, call me a nutcase here, but I felt this really eerie echo of the treatments that they used at the time, how they would bleed people. And you know, it was this way of denying nourishment to the bad part of the body, but even though you'd also hurt the good part of the body, it really feels a lot like what chemotherapy tries to accomplish. Am I wrong?
Well, so, you know, chemotherapy is, as you know, chemotherapy is poison.
Right.
At least traditional chemotherapy is a mechanism to find a narrow difference between the growth of normal cells and cancer cells. Cancer cells happen to grow faster than most cells, and traditional chemotherapy is directed at that growth. Now, I say traditional because chemotherapy is an overarching word. It means many things. It means any chemical therapy that attacks any diseased organ. And already, as the book points out, we're already seeing a change in the universe of chemotherapy. There are chemotherapies that don't do, that are not
right.
toxic poisons, and they've already appeared in the world of oncology.
You know, in you read 400 pages into this book, and you get to this very dramatic moment. Let me just read you this sentence here. For cancer, the backlog of scientific data had reached a critical point. The boil of science inevitably produced a kind of steam and an urgent rhapsodic pressure that could only find release in technology. Cancer science, and we're talking about the early 1990s and the 1980s here, was begging to find release in a new kind of cancer medicine. What is that new kind of cancer medicine that you describe?
Well, the new kind of cancer medicine, I mean, this is a very important moment in the history of cancer science. I mean, the new kind of cancer medicine has to do with drugs or preventative measures that take into account the fundamental mechanism by which the cancer cell arises or the fundamental mechanism by which the cancer cell lives. And there was an explosion of understanding in the 1960s of what cancer really was, and the book talks about this moment. And the most seminal realization of this moment was the fact that cancer is typically, not always, but typically caused by activations of genes that already exist within the human genome.
We contain the seeds of our own demise, and decoding them is really what these new therapies
exactly
are.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
You know, Doctor, before we go, I have to ask you about not so much the science of this book, but what your friend Germaine taught you in the end.
Well, you know, so one of the themes that's stitched into the book is my own experience with patients, and Germaine was a patient of mine, and essentially the book is inspired by the resilience of patients. You know, this idea that you have to keep moving one step ahead in order to continue to battle cancer, and whether it's a war for you or whether it's another metaphor, it doesn't matter. But this idea that you're locked in this kind of game, if you will, with this lethal, often chronic disease, that's what Germaine really teaches us.
Patients amaze you in this story, and being a doctor makes you very, very humble. That must be a painful experience.
Absolutely. Well, this was a tough, you know, Emperor of All Maladies was tough to write because of exactly this reason, because of going back to patients, and they amaze you, but they're the source of this book.
Do we know what cancer is? Do you know what cancer is?
Well, we know a little bit of what cancer is, but there's so much more to learn still.
The Emperor of All Maladies, A Biography of Cancer, is the book by Dr. Siddhartha Mukherjee. He joined us from Boston. Doctor, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Give us a call. We were wondering if your own life story has changed because of an appearance of cancer on the timeline. Reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tell us at thetakeaway.org. While you're at the website, check out our blog. At our blog, we give you a glimpse at what we're working on for the next day. You can give us your suggestions. You can respond to the stories that we're thinking about. You can find posts from John and I, from contributors, from Takeaway guests. Check it out at thetakeaway.org and then click on blog. And of course, you can get an update on our assignment for the Takeaway iPhone app of what home means to you. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.